The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty!
It's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty!
It's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor,
Andy, Jimmy, JC.
All we know and all we talk about is
booty, booty!
It's time to get this party started tonight.
Are you on the same normal commuter?
No, another one.
Oh my God, you sound amazing.
I was going to say, he sounds much better.
You do.
And he's clearer.
Yeah. You're at the office or you're home?
No, at home. But I'm on the work computer.
Okay, the work computer is really good. Because honestly, you sound like really good right now.
Is that right?
Seriously.
Yeah, you sound really, like, sexy.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Are you not using a mic?
No.
So it's computer mic?
Computer, yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. That's excellent. That's good news. We have, there's a future of hope in the podcast here. Yeah. That's not bad at all.
Good lighting, too. Like you look actually really good looking.
Yeah, well.
No, come on, Forrest. Let's not exaggerate now.
Well,
he's going to be insufferable.
Trying to give him a little bump.
It's Footy Prime, everyone.
Nice and wild.
Some MLS shortly. Matt Doyle joins us. Matt's got a new Substack, Tactics Free Zone.
Mm-hmm.
Really good, actually. It's excellent. Yeah. We'll talk all things Major League Soccer. But to start with, very quickly, last night, the champs, CPL champs, so were crashed out of the Champions Cup to Nashville, 7-0 over both legs. And I don't know, Craig, is it a reality check or did we know this was the gap already? But then we see CPL teams doing pretty well in the Canadian Championship against MLS teams. Is that because those MLS teams are terrible? Explain to me, what do we learn from Nashville taking care of the CPL champ so easily?
Well, I mean, CPL teams have performed well in the past. I mean, there is a gap, obviously, and we know this, and it's going to be difficult for them when they're in that realm, and it's good for them. They can learn from it. They can advance. They can get better for it, but we know there's a gap there, of course. I was hoping for a little bit better than 7-0 and what Vancouver got down to 8 and Forge 4-1, right, on aggregate. So,
yeah.
But I mean, Dubs, I mean, it's so difficult, right, for these teams, and that this is their preseason as well. And I know Nashville only just started off their regular season, but it's such a weird thing the way the game is in North America, and they have these teams who haven't played for months, and then they get thrown into high end competition in this region during their preseason when they're still building their teams.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the solution is unless they all adopt the same calendar, which isn't going to happen. But it's a pretty good excuse, I think.
Yes, I definitely see that side to the argument, but it's got to be disappointing to see the champs for CPL to fall so overwhelmingly, so decidedly to a team like Nashville, who's a very good side. But that second, I mean, Jimmy, you were on the call. That second match was very much versus their B side. A lot of guys getting rotated in, a lot of changes, lots of minutes to players who probably won't feature a whole lot in MLS matches. So I think it's disappointing. I don't know if it's a reckoning of sorts for CPL, but if you want to compete, you want to improve year on year on year, and to see the champs go down so easily, kind of just roll over to Nashville, can't be a good feeling for CPL this morning.
Yeah. You know, well, even the first match, they didn't have most of the big hitters. They came on towards the end of the match, like Sturridge, Mukhtar, Espinosa, Madrigal. I mean, they didn't even play last night. So it goes to show you. I mean, it's hard to compete when you're competing against a salary cap like teams in the MLS that have designated players and guys that can come on and change a game. But it, for me, I just looked at that match last night with Ottawa, and I thought, not once did they really look like, let's roll up the sleeves and let's get at this game. let's give it to them. We lose 5-0 or we lose 1-0. At least let's have a go here. And I think they had one shot in two matches. So, you know, it just goes to show you the difference, the different levels of play between the two. Ottawa, yes, they've got a young side. They're going to gain valuable experience out of this. So they'll get an understanding of what that next level, so to speak, is and what Champions Cup football is all about. So for the young guys, you know, when you look at like Kozlovsky, Abatne, the list goes on with the younger players that they have. It's a good experience for them to see what the standard's like when you jump up.
And for the actual schedule coming in preseason, whatnot, I mean, it obviously makes it a little more difficult. But you look what happened in the Champions League in Europe with Bode Glimt. They haven't had a league game for months. I think it was November was their last league game. They played some friendlies, and they've just pulled off, which is arguably the greatest run of results I've ever seen for a small club like that. It's incredible, beating, what, Man City 3-1, and then they needed to beat Atletico Madrid away 2-1, get into the knockout stage, and then they over two legs, beating Inter 5-2, wasn't it? Like, talking about? It's amazing.
Yeah. I think, you know, Stax, when you look at it, it's about being brave when you're a bit of an underdog. It's about just having a go at it. You got nothing to lose. Right. And I think that's why, you know, you do see upsets at times, because people just go, you know what, we're not going to bunker in. We're not just going to sit along and park the bus. We're actually going to get forward. We're going to disrupt you, and we're going to try to make something happen. I just felt that with Ottawa last night, it was just too kind of slow. You know, there was no momentum. There was no urgency to get forward. I think they must have had 1,000 passes between the back three. With Kluche, Abatne, and who was the other one that started there? Let me get it.
Do you think the first leg getting beat kind of put him on the heels a little bit, yeah, psychologically?
You're 2-0 down.
Yeah.
You know, you're away from home. You're in Nashville. You're on a beautiful pitch. Just get at it. But, I mean, Maia said that he wants to stay and play the way that they're used to and who they are as a team. And okay, well, you did it, and you lost 5-0. So sometimes don't be afraid of change and mix it up a little bit.
So right. It's a bit like being a samurai, right? You might die, but die well. Yeah. Die on your terms. You know, you can lose.
Harry Carey.
Okay. Yeah, Harry Carey. Exactly. Great commentator. Baseball legend.
Is the moon made of cheese?
As he launches the dagger into his stomach.
Hi. I didn't think of Will Ferrell doing it on SNL. Yeah. It's one of my favorite bits.
That's so much. It's a loss. It is what it is. And it was fun while it lasted. But what we've, I think, ascertained here is that nothing's been ascertained. We don't know the reason for this stuff. Bode Glimt can go out and get famous results with little, you know, training time. Although I can't do it against an MLS team. So we've accomplished nothing in the first 10 minutes of the show. Thankfully, I know, Jim, you got to leave soon. If you got to jump, thank you so much. Great insight as always. And we'll speak to you later this week.
Okay, and let's go Vancouver. Vancouver, big game tonight. It's Cartagena's.
Are you on that call as well?
Yes.
Oh, busy, Jimmy.
Yes.
Never sounded better right now.
I know.
My God.
Come back and sound exactly the same, but for now, fucking beat it.
Yeah. Okay. See ya.
We have a guest. Can you bring Matt on?
I can. Yeah, I'm waiting for Jimmy to get the
hat. All right, I'm out.
All right, see ya.
There we go. Go away, Jimmy.
All right.
As I mentioned earlier, Tactics Free Zone, that is Matt Doyle's latest project. It's fantastic. Check it out. You love MLS. You want to learn about MLS. That's your new home. It's brilliant. Matt, welcome back to Footy Prime. How you doing, mate?
I'm doing great, especially after that introduction. I didn't even have to plug my own stuff. You guys took care of it. Total pros. Yep. Total pros.
I wouldn't call us pros, far from it, if you listen to the previous 10 minutes. Let me ask you this. All right, I know you do your power rankings, right? And they're always difficult, especially early in this season. But when do you feel confident predicting an MLS team? How many weeks into the MLS season? Because it's always impossible after week one and probably week two and probably week three.
I mean, there's some of it's easy. We all know that LAFC, Miami, Nashville, Vancouver are going to be really good. Seattle. Some of it is more difficult, right? Like nobody really saw it coming with the Union last year. And then in retrospect, you're like, oh, okay, you know, they have a really well-defined and I think resilient game model. We know that high-pressing smash-mouth soccer works in MLS. And also, they had an easier schedule because they weren't playing CCL last year. They didn't have Leagues Cup, so they were able to keep more of their best players on the field more often in a way that Cincinnati couldn't. So there's always a couple of those, but I'm pretty confident that I have a pretty decent track record with the less with the power rankings than those preseason tiers that I do, where I'm like, okay, these are the good teams, these are the mediocre teams. And to be fair, there's always like 22 mediocre teams in MLS, and like these are the four absolutely terrible teams. But also, like, I thought that the LA Galaxy were going to be one of the mediocre teams last year, right? I thought they were going to be a top 10 team even without Ricky Pooch and, what was it, 16 winless to start the season? So there's always one or two, and that is kind of the joy of this silly league of ours.
A team that I think is going to turn some real heads this year, and a team that, you know, those somewhat close to Toronto FC have got some eyes on, especially with, you know, not just Michael Bradley, but Julian de Guzman, of course, involved at the Red Bulls as well. Michael Bradley looks and sounds like a proper football manager. He's young.
Yeah, since he was 16.
Yeah, right. He's groomed for this. The playing career was almost like, you know, just got in the way until he became a manager at some point, right? But he looks and sounds like he knows what he's doing. He's got a young team there, players that he knows from last year. Are they a team that you can really see causing some noise this year and turning some heads?
I am skeptical of that. I thought they were great for 70 minutes against Orlando, but Orlando were a disaster in the preseason, and that back line is a mess. And that's kind of an ideal opponent to go up against if you're trying to play pretty soccer and, you know, make an impact with how you want to play and sort of define that. So it was kind of like a perfect confluence of events for Red Bulls to open up like that. And I think they will have a lot of moments where they put together these beautiful flowing attacks, but then they will have a lot of moments where they are just getting overpowered, where they're not able to get on the ball and control the game. And I look at that team and like, are they built to suffer? Are they built to like, okay, we're just going to have to be resilient and ride this out for the final 35, 40 minutes. And I would be surprised if they had that. But I think on a more macro picture, I think Michael Bradley is going to be successful. I think he's probably going to breathe some life into that organization, which so desperately needs it. Like they are, you know, one of the big embarrassments in MLS, as far as I'm concerned, just because of the way Red Bull Global treats them. And they need that. They need someone who's there because he wants to be there, not someone who's in, you know, 2 years in between jobs and then looking to go back to Europe immediately. You know, it has to be someone who really resonates with the locals and Michael Bradley because of who he was as a player 22 years ago for that team. I think he resonates like that. And I think he'll get a lot out of this really talented group of kids that they have that came through the academy. And you'll win some games with kids, but you don't win trophies with them, right? You need,
you need more veterans. Ask Alex Ferguson about that. He can't win with kids.
Can't win with kids.
Not often, though. You're right.
Yeah. So it's going to be a fun team to watch. They might make the playoffs, but I wouldn't pick them for any sort of deep run or anything like that.
Who do you think in the league, Matt, has done the best bit of business off season so far? Maybe a mediocre team that's going to challenge the season?
Well, that gives me another chance to plug tacticsfreezone.com. Today, later on today, I'm handing out my off-season grades. I've got the East coming today, and I've got the West coming tomorrow. What Nashville did to take what was already a very good team and add another match winner unquestionably in Christian Espinoza, but then also sort of transition in some younger players to bigger roles, like Schwaki, the goalkeeper, like he's the number one now. Then they went out and got Reed Baker Whiting, who's an ideal backup at both fullback slots. Like just across the board, I think it was an offseason masterclass from Mike Jacobs in that front office. And the hardest thing, I think, is to go from like a good 55-point team to like a great, potentially 65, 70-point team. And I like that is tough, and I think he did it. And like they've become a more fun team to watch in the process. So that's the big one. The lower tier, I really kind of like DC United's offseason, which is funny because I didn't think I did. Right. And they hired that Turkish agent to be the CSO. And I don't know if everybody knows the lore here, but he was an agent. He has never worked for a club, never worked in a front office. He writes books like dramatic thrillers about soccer agents and self-publishes them on Amazon. They're so like half written. They're half written by like AI. They're insane. Like this is. And this guy is the chief soccer officer for DC United. He emo posts on LinkedIn. Like, if you look at his LinkedIn profile, he's got like a running log of what's happening in the DC front. And a lot of it is like, oh, he's disappointed that this agent, you know, went back on his word. And he's talking about this in public on LinkedIn. It is insane. And so when this guy was hired,
I'm so intrigued.
I know.
I'm going to go down this rabbit hole.
I thought it was going to be a rolling disaster. I thought it was going to be like one, you know, oh, I'm signing this guy for too much money because my buddy is his age. I thought it was going to be one deal like that after another. But honestly, they've had a pretty solid offseason. They picked the right kid, number one, the defender from Montreal. They went out and got Ty Baribo, who's just like a natural goal scorer. He's going to give you 15 goals no matter what. And then in week one, we saw not only the new guys performed pretty well, but the head coach, Renny Vyler, I think got more out of the holdovers. Guys like Matty Peltola and Jackson Hopkins, guys who were kind of fringe players the past few years, suddenly they looked really good against Philly. And to be fair, it's not the same Philly side as last year. But that's one I blew it with, right? Because I set their over-under at like 26.5 points. And in retrospect, if this team ends up on like 40, 42 points, I wouldn't be surprised at all. That is still not a great team, but it's a hell of a lot better than winning the wooden spoon and being everybody's punchline.
Dr. Erkut Sogut, Dubs.
That's the man.
Okay. he might be an amazing podcast.
I need to be like,
you have to get him on the show. You have to get him on the show because this guy contains multitudes, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's crazy. I want to pivot a little bit away from that, strangely, because I really want to do a deep dive on it. But what MLS has done really well in the last couple of years is big DPs, huge names in world football, signed to teams where they mesh in perfectly with the existing philosophy of the clubs. Suns won. I mean, obviously, Bwanga, Mueller. But whispers recently about Griezmann to Orlando? And let me tell you, Montreal Impact fans, CF Montreal fans are pissed. Like, how dare a Frenchman consider a move to Orlando? I know it's not in the DNA of the club now to go out and get those heavy hitters. Like, the Drogba days are long since gone. But what do you think of that potentially happening? And is this the direction that we're going in with MLS, where you've got these huge swings, you're able to land them because you've got the cash to do it, but they align with the club's philosophy?
I mean, my big disappointment is that MLS didn't loosen the purse strings in the rule book 3 years ago. Right when Messi came to Miami, like the next year was Copa America. And then obviously 2 years later would be this coming summer is the time to turbocharge all of this was in the summer of 2023, winter of 2024. And it feels like a massive missed opportunity. Better late than never. As you said, you know, Messi fits with Miami. All the Barca boys fit with Miami and Son with LAFC. But remember, that came on the heels of Olivier Giroud, who manifestly did not fit with that team. So it's still hit and miss. And I think I would lay the credit for the ones that are hits more at the feet of the clubs than anything the league has done. As for Griezmann, I actually wrote about it today. It's like, I don't know. Like, are they going to play him as a false nine? Like, because they play a 4-2-3-1, right? And Oscar Perry has always played a 4-2-3-1. Shades of gray in there, but like, it's not going to be a two-striker system. I don't know if Griezmann is ideal in that, especially at his age. He's 35 years old. So that's a big question that I have on it. And then the other aspect of it for Orlando is like, their defense is a mess, and their central midfield is kind of a mess too. And Griezmann doesn't help that, you know? So this is a team that, you know, you're putting a Band-Aid on a bloody stump, quite possibly. The Montreal side of it, like,
it's very Monty Python somehow.
Yeah. I'm all right.
It is, it is more than a flesh wound, you know, definitely. The Montreal part of it, look, man, I actually really liked the theory behind the Ivan Jaime signing from last year. And there were more players like that out there. And like, if they can go out and get two or three of those guys on good wages or a good fee, and then also keep developing players like Nathan Saliba and Ismael Kone and down the line, then like, that's an identity. That is something that you can hang your hat on as a club and as a fan of the club. But you know, Montreal, they go one way, they go the other, and they go back again. And it never culminates in anything sustained or sustainable. And it's disappointing, because that's a, you know, a club that's been around a long time. They have a very good history. They've given us all some, like, I still remember the Cameron Porter goal. You know, like, they have given us all some fantastic moments. If you care about CONCACAF and you care about North American soccer, I would like for them to be more than an afterthought, but it doesn't look like that's happening anytime soon.
You talk about the, you know, the aging superstar DP, right? Which was frowned upon for a while there. Certainly, you know, the Gerrards, the Schweinsteigers, et cetera. You mentioned Giroud. But then do you think it's changed again since the success of Messi and Busquets and Müller? In recent times, recency bias is such a big thing in soccer and sports. Is it kind of back in vogue now, saying, actually, if you get the right guy, it can work?
Yeah, I think it is. And I have mixed feelings about that. But I will admit, like, when Son is on TV or Messi is on, I watch, you know, and like, I don't necessarily feel that way about every single DP. But ideally, though, the some of the spending restrictions come off, and those guys still keep coming, but MLS rosters start looking more like Brazil Serie A, the top Brazilian team rosters, and instead of selling to Palmeiras, we're buying from Palmeiras. You know, I think MLS, that has to be the goal, to be the best league in the Americas, and the DP rule and the salary cap has really served its purpose. Like, I think it was a good idea, and it was right to maintain it for a long time. And maybe some kind of salary cap should be maintained throughout the rest of the decade or even beyond. But it has to be less onerous on the ambitious teams. Like, we can't let the Montreals and Dallases of the league slow down the ones that have real ambition to build world clubs, because the way you become one of the best leagues in the world is by having the clubs push you there. And we're not allowing the best clubs to do that right now. We're getting closer, but we're not there, and we're not going to get there as long as this current rule book stays in place.
Mm-hmm. Is it a case of Matt of just being careful and history of the game in North America, and they're just a little bit worried about letting it go loose?
I think so. I think this is what it started off as. And then now, especially over the past dozen years, it's, oh, we don't actually have to spend that much more, but the valuations of these teams keep skyrocketing. You know, like, I think it's Forbes or maybe Sports Business Journal. They publish their team valuations every single year, and the MLS ones just keep going up. And MLS has been a better investment over the past 15 years than California real estate. Like, the way that these numbers have skyrocketed, it's unbelievable. So I think that there's just a real, look, there's a billionaire class doing what the billionaire class does. Like, they don't become billionaires by spending a lot of money, right? They find every wedge. And in this case, the wedge is like, oh, we actually don't have to spend that much more on the players. The valuations keep going up. We actually get real estate out of this, and the city will build infrastructure around it. So like, why would we change the business model? Oh, we're only the 10th best team in the league or in the world and 10th best league in the world instead of the sixth. Okay, my club that I spent $8 million on just sold for $800 million. I'm okay with what's going on here. Like, if you think of, it's like just the follow the money aspect of it, I think explains a lot of why things still are as they are.
And the owners don't give a shit that the, like the world football and how they view MLS, right? Like if within kind of their own insular world of MLS, if those valuations keep going up, like they're happy to continue to do it.
I think that there's a good chunk of owners who actually really do care. I think there's a good chunk of owners that really want to push the envelope and become the best league of the world. I really do think it might even be more than half. But there are others who see it all. And look, I gave the very cynical take about the valuation and real estate side of it. At the same time, the quality of play is continuing to rise. The quality of players who are coming out of MLS academies, the quality and volume of those players, compared to 10 years ago, it's night and day. Like nobody in the world, I think, has made a similar jump, right? Like if you look at Morocco and the advancements they've made, like it's because they've gotten a lot of those guys from Spain and from the Netherlands and from France, right? It's not like there has been this exponential increase in the amount of talent coming from Moroccan club academies. MLS, it's the, like we're just getting more and more guys who are coming through the Red Bulls, who are coming through, you know, RSL, and hopefully Toronto can finally follow suit, because you guys know Toronto is as rich a hotbed as almost any place in North America when it comes to soccer talent, and TFC haven't really weaponized that in the way they should.
They weaponized the other leagues and other clubs in the league.
Yes.
Yeah, more than happy to do that, but hopefully they've realized it. On TFC, Josh Sargent, it's not official just yet, but it seems to be done. Forgetting the price tag, how will he adapt to MLS? The championship is a pretty similar league, I think.
Yeah, so I think he'll be good. I think Josh Sargent's a good soccer player. He's in his prime. I looked at the numbers. It was like 51 goals in about 9,300 minutes in the championship over the past 3 years, which is a very, you know, above solid rate of return. Really good hold up play. He's physical, but not a giant, but he can hold his own. There's a lot to like. I am mildly concerned about his injury history. I am mildly concerned that he doesn't put the ball in the back of the net when he plays for the U.S. national team. He has not scored for the U.S. since 2019, which is unbelievable. When you like, I think he had 5 goals in his first 8 games and like none in his subsequent 20. It's incredible for a guy who's legitimately a good soccer player. And then the other thing that gives me pause, Emmanuel Latelath had a much better goals record in the championship than Josh Sargent did. And Emmanuel Latelath has been a massive flop for Atlanta United, like just clearly not good enough to be a starter in this league. And these guys were similar level players in the championship. That might not be signal. It might just be noise. Atlanta's a mess. There's a lot of things that have gone wrong. But it might be signal. It might be an indication that it's not as easy a transition from the championship to MLS as people tend to think. So I think it's a pretty good bet that Josh Sargent is going to be good. It is tough to spend $22 million on a pretty good bet, right? I would want a sure thing bet. So it's like, it is one of the stories that I'm going to be keeping a very, very close eye on over the course of this season. But one more point I just want to make about that. He does fit perfectly with Georgi Mihailovic and Daniel Shalloway. Like he's a type of number 9 who I think will just instantly vibe with both of those guys.
And do you think, because I posed this question to our resident TFC expert, John Molinaro, tfcrepublic.ca for everybody listening. And I asked him, will Sargent's arrival, once that happens, once that's official, will that influence where Georgie is deployed on the pitch? And he felt like Georgie's best position. I watched him play a couple of seasons with CF Montreal, but he naturally finds that left half space, whether he's a 10 or he's a left winger. So I wanted to get your take on it.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think with Shallowy, his best position is on the left wing, full stop, right? So if they went out and got him for a reason, that tells me that Georgie will play as a 10 drifting into that left half space. Shallowy will probably stay more wide, not exactly chalk on his boots, but like a true winger, which means overlapping from the left back, which is probably a smart thing. Because I'm not sure defensively they're going to be solid enough if they're taking a lot of chances and throwing numbers forward. The other part of it is Georgie is a really great chance creator, one of the best in the league. He doesn't control the game. So they're going to need pitch control to come from those deeper lying central midfielders. Jose Cifuentes will be one of them. I like Cuello. I'm not sure he's a high-level starter in MLS. So with that open DP slot the Toronto still have, wouldn't be at all shocked if they went out and they got sort of a veteran, really high-level, game-controlling number six who could do the organizing and orchestrating and just let the attackers be the attackers.
They could have got Stakio, couldn't they? But they chose not to. So anyway, saying, would have been a nice fit in there, I think.
He's looking quite good in black and gold, though, isn't he?
He really fits. He looks brilliant, yeah.
Back to your off-season business rankings list on Tactics Free Zone later today. Was that done with Josh Sargent as the TFC player? Or
yeah.
Was it right? It was, okay. Okay.
It was. So that I gave him, I'll spoil it. I gave Toronto a B-. I thought they needed to do more along this up the spine, I think, than they did. I like the Walker Zimmerman signing, and I'm glad Luka Gavron is going to get a chance, but I thought there needed to be a little bit more work. And obviously they've left it late. And look, points you lose in February and March, those count the same as points you lose in August and September. And this is a team that is going to be like the fight for the playoffs in the East is going to be a bloodbath. Every point is going to matter. And I would have been a lot more comfortable with, hey, Toronto's going to have a bounce back year if they had gotten this work done in, a month ago.
Back to the West for a second. Yeah, sorry. Just want to ask about Vancouver. So they locked up, I think yesterday announced they signed Kubas and also Blackman. Do you think Berhalter's next?
I mean, I hope for their sake. He's a perfect fit with Kubas, and he very clearly vibes with Thomas Müller, and there's sort of a heart of the team aspect to how he carries himself out there and how his teammates respond to him. At the same time, I love MLS, right? I have the disease and I can't shake it. But I am very well aware that almost every soccer player's dream is to test themselves in Europe. And if he's coming to the end of his contract and can go over there on a free, that would make a lot of sense, I'm going to get to choose the right situation for me and give myself a chance to live my dream for at least a year or two. And look, we all know if it doesn't work out for look at Georgi Mihailovic. It didn't work out for him in the Eredivisie. And he came back and was a DP and then got sold for $10 million. And he's now in pretty close to a dream situation where he is the main guy on the team. Like Seb Berhalter can, carve a different position, but he could carve a similar path, I'm sure, if things don't work out for him 2 years from now. I hope Vancouver get it done, but I would understand if it doesn't happen, I would understand why.
My last question for you, Matt, have you considered with the calendar change, how that's going to change your life? Sucker, because I think
more bloody stumps.
I'm just thinking to myself, well, summers would be easier. But, yeah. My God, the winter and fall and the spring are going to be a gong show.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. I am skeptical that it'll work. I think that the gates, you know, there's going to be a lot of empty stadiums. Obviously, they're going to have to deal with that probably by front loading Southern American markets with games in like late January or early February, and obviously into December, domes as well. And it, like, it doesn't, it feels ugly. It doesn't quite feel right. But it would actually make my life easier, because I like, I'm indoors all day during the winter anyway. Like, okay, I'll sit around in my underwear and watch soccer for 10 hours on a Saturday. That's fine. It was great.
That's our thumbnail for today, by the way.
Yeah. And then it's just like, oh, I get to have a real life. I haven't had a life during the summer for almost 20 years. So it's like, okay, I guess I can, you know, go on vacation and not be worried at checking the, you know, FUTMOB scores the whole time. Like, I can actually, so I like, I don't know, it'll probably work out for me personally. I would be really nervous about this if I was one of the decision makers at MLS though. Like that is like, I've seen a lot of folks in everywhere from New England, obviously, Toronto and Montreal, Chicago fans, Minnesota, like saying, like, this is not going to be workable for us in any real way.
Yeah, it's going to be it's an experiment, I suppose. I want it to work. I do. But yeah, like you said, there's some concerns around certain regions of North America for sure. Matt, listen, thank you so much. Really enjoyed this, as always. We'll get back on real soon. And again, tell the listeners and the viewers about Tactics Free Zone.
Yeah, tacticsfreezone.com. It is my new newsletter. All the stuff that I did for 15 years at MLSsoccer.com, picked that up and I moved it and doing my own thing. So check it out, please. And also check out SoccerWise, which is my podcast. Comes out every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. It comes out a lot. SoccerWise is the feed across all the podcasts and socials and all of that. And guys, thank you so much for having me on. It was real fun.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Subscriber here. Thanks for the content.
I got the freebie, but I'm going to pay for it as well.
Thanks, Kyle.
I'm going to sign up.
Thank you all. Appreciate that. Take care, guys.
That is Matt Doyle. As mentioned, there, tacticsfreezone.com. And his podcast, Soccer Wise, with David Goss, who's often on Footy Prime as well.
Friend of the show. He's a real friend Goss.
And actually, I've had Andrew Eby on as well this past week. And I believe he's been on our show before, hasn't he?
He has done, but he's not a regular over on
Soccer Wise. No, I know. He's a guest. Yeah. But he's been on
Doyle,
the
yeah. So it's Tommy Scoops, Goss, and Doyle now, right. Soccer wise. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Very good.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Good. Yeah.
Craig, I mean, calendar switch. He does make some very good points and he's skeptical, but once they've gone, they can't go back again, can they? Or can they?
Yeah. I can see why there's some skepticism there. Mm-hmm. They're going to make it work. But he's right. There's going to be some schedule differences from the start of the season, I'm sure, because of the weather up north.
There'll be some, you know, sticking roofs on stadiums. You can do it. It's possible. Maybe that'll be the solution for some of these regions. MLSE can afford that, can't they? Put a dome over BMO Field, stick a roof on it. Can't be that much, can it?
Yeah, right.
I don't know. I don't want to get into like the infrastructure problem that we have here and like the COC's call to action or like sounding the alarm bells, you know, about the investment in sport in our country. Infrastructure is a big part of it, whether you're talking about Winter Olympians or our grassroots sports and like the next crop of Olympians. Like, I think we're in like it's a really dire situation that we're in currently. But you can add the Canadian MLS clubs to that as well. Because if you're not MLSE, if you're Vancouver, we know the situation out there. And another question I had for Doyle, I didn't even get a chance to get to because I felt like the Berhalter contract situation was the more pressing one, is can they continue to have success almost in a vacuum, right? Like last year, we weren't sure about Sorensen, how that was going to land. Schuster did a great job again. And the rest of that front office to put out a good product on the pitch and the players delivered and had an outstanding season, but can they replicate that with the same uncertainty around the club? Like, that's a pretty big ask of those players of that club to do it, right? And then Montreal, mm-hmm. like, I don't know. I mean, they've put in that bid. Gabriel Gervais has done the hard work with the provincial government. The local government continues to be a challenge, I think, in Montreal and how they're working together. But if they have a genuine bid for a national training center and it's out of Montreal, then that is, you know, you pat my back and I'll pat yours. Like, that helps everybody out, right? But who knows if they get it? I think Toronto is are definitely the leading candidate there, not only for their proximity to Europe, but also just because it's the hub, like it or not, our West Coast listeners, right?
Yeah, I know. It's not going out west, is it?
This thing. No, it's not.
It makes no sense. And that's not criticizing out west. There's many reasons why it should be out there, being that it's the hub of football in this country. But those European-based players, that's a big old flight for those camps.
Yep.
And you're spending millions in this center. You want those players coming in for these camps, and that's where they'll be held. So, yeah, lots to talk about there over the coming weeks and months before they announce it. At some point, we'll get Peter Agrusso back on the show. I know Peter would love to come on. And we'll put him on the spot. And Kevin as well, Kevin Blue. Get them both on again. When was that? When did we get them both on? That was when Kevin was first hired, wasn't it? Didn't we have like a double guest?
Yeah, they were both on, yeah.
Yeah, that was a good show. Yep. I think it was just after Kevin was hired.
I think you're right. Anyway. So it's coming up to 2 years ago.
Yeah,
the episodes run together.
They do. You get over 1,000, they all just merge into one, don't they?
Yeah. I'm enjoying about like how tall I look. I look taller than
Forrest. Yeah, I'm kind of short.
I'm a towering 6'7".
No one mentioned my glasses.
Oh, are they new?
They're progressives. But these ones are actually called a computer progressive. So they're kind of broken into three increments. So I can now, for the first time doing this podcast, I can look at my laptop down here beautifully and look up there in that mid-range area, and you guys are clear.
Oh, that's great. Wow. You're going to fall up the stairs.
Yeah, I know, exactly. They said, do not drive with these. Do not drive. Don't worry.
That's right. You're already heavily sedated.
Yeah, $5 at Shoppers. It's not
bad. Great value.
Oh, it's amazing. Like the last 2 weeks, I've been struggling so badly with with the Shoppers drug mark readers. They're too strong for me. I've had a headache for like 2 weeks. But anyway, just thought I'd mention that because they look nice as well. What was I going to say? Oh, sorry, before we go, last night on the One Soccer broadcast, KJ was talking about a conversation with Jesse Marsh regarding the health of both Promise David and Alphonso Davies. And Marsh seems optimistic about Davies. So he mentioned 2 weeks. We heard 2 to 4 weeks. But they might bring even the injured players to the Marsh camp anyway to be part of that environment, which is probably smart. But more concerning was what he mentioned regarding Promise David.
Yeah.
And how that they're hoping that he can go through a non-invasive treatment of this. It's a quad tear, I believe. But they are considering still the option of surgery, which would which would, of course, all but certainly rule him out of the World Cup. That's 3 to 6 months for surgery. Man. I mean, that is extremely concerning.
For our most informed striker.
Yeah, yeah. A guy that people are screaming to be given a chance.
Mm-hmm. Is he second in the Belgian league in the scoring too, I think?
He's up there, yeah. Could be second he's up now. There.
Club's
There's
doing
no one
well.
Else scoring for Canada right now. There's no one else scoring on a consistent basis, not one striker.
No, I think Jebison got one recently. But yeah, like, I mean, not as prolifically. And consistently as Promise David. And what's concerning to me, it's a different injury, but like I've heard it described as a thigh injury. Obviously, we don't know a tremendous amount of detail about it, especially the way he went down, right? There was a lot of things to kind of consider there. You're like his face stretchered off, like what's happening? Was he concussed? As you mentioned, Sharms, and then they said thigh. But then I've heard it described as a hip injury as well. Yeah, so you do have a thigh muscle that crosses both joints. So it's possible it's that, or it's a hip flexor, who knows, right? But it makes me think of the Alistair Johnston injury situation. It's a completely different injury. It's a hamstring, but he comes back, maybe rushed a little bit to return to the pitch, to return to action, and then does it again. And then he needs surgery at that point.
Yeah.
But you're thinking about, you know, you're forecasting on his availability for the World Cup. You maybe trial that and you know that it might fail, but you're willing to risk it just for a shot at the World Cup. Whereas if you decide to do surgery, then you're out either way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You wonder what the club would recommend. I wonder in that situation, would they recommend just have the surgery, get healthy? They want to sell him in the summer, probably, right?
Yeah. So they're going to do what's best for the club.
Yeah.
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 So is that surgery or is that, okay, let's, because in that case, it's interesting from the club perspective. If the goal is, and who knows, but we hear a lot about Promise David moving on this summer. A lot of clubs are interested. If the goal is to sell Promise David this summer, you want to see him back on the pitch this season, ideally. And perhaps with surgery, perhaps you don't. Right? 3 months. I mean, they say 3 to 6 months. It's a big window there, right? It varies. 3 and 6 months. Mm-hmm. What is it? So who knows? But I think from the club perspective, Craig, you want to get him on the pitch this season.
Yeah, you do.
For many reasons, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, you just hope that they're the people dealing with it are looking out the best interests of the player.
Yeah.
And not the club and not the national team. What's best for Promise David right now and for him to get back to full fitness?
Would the alternative also be, Dubs, if he doesn't have the surgery and tries to come back and makes it even worse? Or is just surgery at that point?
I think it's probably surgery. It's just surgery as it pertains to the specific injury that he has, right? But then, like, if you go back, you're not fully fit, and then your body starts to develop some patterns of compensation as a result, and you might do something else. You might make it a worse overall kind of global injury, and then your time, your return to play is then prolonged. It's much longer than the initial projection of injury or time away.
Right. Yeah, tough to know, obviously, without the diagnosis. And let's just hope for the best of Promise David, because from a selfish Canadian standpoint, it would be a crushing loss to lose him.
Yeah, he's a great guy, too. He deserves it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, listen, that's for your prime. Anything else you want to touch on before we move on?
No, I don't think so, but I was just thinking about all the injuries right now. And I mean, there is a ton of uncertainty, right? I mean, and you want to wrap everybody in cotton and put them in your pocket before the World Cup starts, right? So that they maintain their health. But there's a lot of guys right now who are important, who are vital to the success of our men's national team, who are injured right now.
Yeah. Promise, Alistair, Johnston, Moise Bembido, Derek Cornelius.
Alfie Jones.
Alfie Jones. Jesus Christ.
Get it out of the way.
Yeah, that's get out of the way. Exactly. All right. Tomorrow, Thursday, we have a broadcast, Dubs.
We do. Yeah, we're going to dive into everything She Believes Cup, about the roster, about the omissions, about is Olivia Smith, is she going to join the group? Is she going to be replaced and with whom? And then also NSL off-season additions. Teams are back in training camps and big moves that we haven't yet talked about. So a little bit of a two-parter.
Is Shireen on?
Shireen and Signa will be on, yep.
Great. Signa, by the way, brilliant job doing the Olympics.
Didn't she do a great job? Yeah.
So good. I watched the Rivals documentary with my kid on the weekend about the Four Nations, and Shireen has a huge part in that.
Yes,
she's
know.
She's brilliant. She's so good in it. The passion. She loves the soccer, we know that, but she loves hockey. She loves the Canadians. Mm-hmm. And it's just she's just oozing passion and emotion at times. It was really well done, I thought, and Shireen came off looking really good.
Well, as she did yesterday when she didn't quote tweet Sarah Valley, but she kind of did a screen grab, and it was just like, come on, you can do better here with this take. I retweeted it. Shireen's, sorry, not Frank's.
No, okay. Yeah, Shireen's terrible take, Shireen. Jesus Christ.
No, excellent take, Shireen. Bad take, Frank Sarah Valley.
All right. I haven't actually seen that, but I will look it up now. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. Jimmy, thank you. And thank you, the Jimmy's mic, or whatever he was using.
My
God, he's never sounded better on this podcast.
I agree.
There's no excuse now. Yeah, I'm really happy about that. It's just a lot of potential for Jimmy.
But how do we replicate it, though? Like, we don't know the factors, what was leading to good sound and good lighting. And
we've got some time to figure it out between him and his next appearance. Mm-hmm. Unless, of course, he's joining you on the broadcast tomorrow.
He most certainly is not. He would be the last person to ask from our regular crew to join the broadcast.
All right. Like and subscribe, please. Make sure you retweet and repost and tell your friends and family all about us. Sign up to our newsletter. We are freddyprime.com. We have a A newsletter coming out every Friday there. I think, Dubsy, it's you this week. You're writing the intro.
That's me, yeah.
I look forward to reading that. All right, Craig, thanks, pal. And we'll see you all next time. Cheers for watching, and our thanks to Mendel.
Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
I'm ready to go 10 to your MLS bloody stumps. That was a funny line. I like that. Want me to press end record?